This is Phil Donahue. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Have you heard about WBAI's discount program offering you savings on your prescribed medications? You can download your free discount card from WBAI.org. Every time you use it, you will save on your cost, and at the same time, you will be helping to support WBAI Radio. There is no extra cost, pledge, or subscription required. WBAI will receive $1.75 from NDC every time you use the card. Your collective participation in this program will help build a healthier WBAI. Check it out on WBAI.org and download your card today.
Thanks to you.
Thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Join Brooklyn for Peace Arts and Culture Committee with Vincent J. Ntunde, author of African Americans Against the Bomb, the compelling story of black activists who fought for nuclear disarmament by connecting the nuclear issue with the fight for racial equality. Two dates. Friday, January 29th, 6:30 p.m. at Word Bookstore, 126 Franklin Street in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And Saturday, January 30th, 2 p.m. at Brooklyn Friends Meeting House, 110 Schermerhorn Street in downtown Brooklyn. For more information, check brooklynpeace.org or call 718-624-5921. That's African Americans Against the Bomb with Vincent J. Ntunde, Friday, January 29th, 6:30 p.m. at Word Bookstore, 126 Franklin Street, Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And Saturday, January 30th, 2 p.m. at Brooklyn Friends Meeting House, 110 Schermerhorn Street in downtown Brooklyn.
Listeners, listen up. The Community Advisory Board, or the CAB, is a group of listeners who meet every Sunday to help WBAI. Our station needs actual work done, hands and bodies, at the WBAI office in Brooklyn, New York. Now is the time to move from listening to action. Come and do some work. We need to pack and mail premiums, call listeners to solve premium problems, complete inventorying, and send out BAI buddy packs. Commit to 12 hours a week or whatever you can. You can show up from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. WBAI's heart and soul is the listener. So bring your body, heart, and soul to 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, you can send an email to volunteer@wbai.org.
You're my earth, sweet paradise.
gets black or gets blue.
Or gets blue.
My soul was fed by you, fed by you. And water with birth, then death is back to dirt.
Good morning. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And this is Earth at Midnight. Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. Stay tuned.
Up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one. It's gonna be, it's gonna be a lovely day.
Seems impossible to fail.
Well, it may be a lovely day, but I had a little mishap here with our music. Let's see if we can get this going again.
If it's magic, then why can't it be everlasting? Like the sun that always shines, like the poet's endless rhyme, like the galaxies in time. If it's pleasing, then why can't it be never leaving? Like the day that never fails, like on seashores there are shells, like the time that always tells. It holds the key to every heart throughout the universe. It fills you up without a bite and quenches every thirst. Oh, if it's special, then with it why aren't we as careful as making sure we dress in style, posing pictures with a smile, keeping danger from a child. It holds the key to every heart throughout the universe. It fills you up without a bite and quenches every thirst. So, if it's magic, why can't we make it everlasting? Like the lifetime of the sun, it will leave no room, for there's enough for everyone.
And you're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight, and we want to say good morning yet again. We are working on our guest. We have a guest scheduled for... Didn't get through that first time out, so we will give it another try in just a moment. But in the meantime, I wanted to let you know about some interesting events that are taking place coming up very soon. And on February 4th, there is a program at the Theater for the New City, and it's called Dare to be Black, the Jack Johnson story, the first black world champion heavyweight boxer. And it's written and performed by Tommy J. Moore. So and directed by Rome Neal. So that's something you might want to check out. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m. And it is and Sundays at 3 p.m. So it's three weekends from February 4th to the 21st. So I think that you might enjoy that very much. So I want to give you an opportunity to jot that down. I have another performance coming up that I want you to know about. And that is coming from Elizabeth Ruff Maldonado. And she is also having a special performance. And let's see if I can get this together for you. Brook Farm was a utopian community in 1840s Massachusetts. Thoreau and Hawthorne lived and worked there for a time. It was founded by George and Sophia Ripley. And Elizabeth directs a play, Sophia Ripley, and you will be able to check it out. It will be at the Metropolitan Playhouse. You can check out metropolitanplayhouse.org or call 212-995-8410. And they have a snow date performance that you'll be able to catch it before it's gone. And it's a play by Nina Howes, Leaving Brook Farm, at the Transcendental East of the Metropolitan Playhouse, 220 East 4th Street between Avenues A and B in Manhattan. And it is on Friday, January 29th at 7:30 p.m. And a talk back on transcendentalism and utopias through the... So that sounds rather interesting. And so you might want to check that out. You can go to, again, www.metropolitanplayhouse.org, or you can go to make a phone call, 212-995-8410, and we will be back in just a moment. I'm going to play another bit of music for you, and I think this will be nice. So far we heard Earth by Michelle and Giocello, Lovely Day by Jill Scott, If It's Magic by Stevie Wonder, and now I'm going to play a little Sweet Honey in the Rock. Oops.
Let us all on our knees, let us all come together on our knees. When we fall on our knees, to the rising sun, oh Lord, then we'll have a little happiness with everyone. Let us clap hands and sing together on our knees. To the rising
And welcome back to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. And I am Catherine in studio with...
Paulette Spencer.
Yes, and you had an interesting evening. Tell us a little about what you did tonight.
Indeed. I had sort of an unexpected last-minute surprise invitation to attend the opera. And so until about, I guess, an hour and a half ago, I was sitting at the Metropolitan Opera House listening to The Pearl Fishers by Bizet. And it was quite beautiful. And it's been, well, maybe about four years, quite a lovely event. And the staging was very beautiful, and so were the singers. And it was extremely crowded. I'm glad I made it in. I had a bit of a delay on the train. Try to hightail it over here as soon as I can. I'm glad I'm here.
I'm glad you made it as well. I don't know if Mercury is in retrograde, but I think I walked in 5 minutes before the start. And now I can't seem to find my guest, so hopefully we will be able to reach him before the end of the show. Andrew Bell is having a really interesting event coming up very soon, and it is in honor of Black History Month, and he's doing a project on in partnership with the New York Public Library and the Center for the Arts Education, the Manhattan Neighborhood Network El Barrio Firehouse Community Media Center proudly presents a 2016 Black History Month exhibition of contemporary African American art and thought. A voyage in visual metaphors tracing consciousness in art from the Nile to now. So it sounds like a fascinating event. And as soon as we can make contact with Andrew Bell, we'll tell a little bit more about that. So I think it's going to be a really interesting event coming up.
Truly.
Yeah.
And in the hopefully near future, I've been in the process of preparing interviews with people I think would be interesting to hear from. And I'm I'm putting together something of a package that reflects, environmental health. And in this particular case, I'm going to be looking at the nuclear industry. And so recently I held an interview with a former nuclear plant engineer and whistleblower, Mr. Arnie Gunderson, to discuss the current situation in Fukushima, Japan, and the repercussions for the ocean life in the Pacific Ocean and the food chain, some of which ends up arriving on the shores of the West Coast.
Wow.
And so it was really quite an interesting discussion. And so we'll be having that for your consumption in the near future. I'm also going to be interviewing Mr. Bruce Gagnon, who is also quite a well-known peace activist who specializes in militarism in space. And so he looks at the plans and the past activities of using NASA as a part of the military arm and what the implications are for us on Earth.
Wow, that's kind of earth-shattering. Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't seen yet anything in the media that really talks about this kind of thing. I mean, we see shadows of it,
and we see claims of no such thing as global warming from Congress and other responsible politicians who don't want to take responsibility for some of the decisions that have been made. But I'm glad that we're going to be able to really talk to people about the truth of what's going on, or at least some of the truth, I'm sure.
Sure.
And so I think that should be pretty cool. I had an interesting experience last Friday. I was actually interviewed, and I'm going to play it, I think, by Corinne Frenari, who is the host of Take Charge of Your Health on Fridays at 1 p.m. And so she invited me to do any work that I do. So I figured, hey, why not play it for people? And so I'm going to do that, and then we can come back and have a little more discussion.
Great.
This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Frenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. Every week I present new and creative ways to help make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, I give practical information to help you take charge of your health. Well, welcome back. We have a special, very special segment today. Part of it is week by week, I interview healers, all different forms of healers. And sometimes a prophet in their own land gets overlooked. So we looked into our own land, and guess what we found? One of the finest healers around is right. I wanted you to hear from Catherine Davis and hear about her practice and how she works with very specifically healing techniques, but also, very importantly, mind-body techniques. Catherine, can you tell us about your practice?
Yes. My practice is primarily energetic, and it's based on something called Reiki, which is spiritually guided life force energy, and Qigong, which is based on traditional Chinese medicine, and a practice called the Sanlin technique, which is indigenous, and it has an energy component, but it's also considered to be like a vision quest, so that the healing process becomes a mechanism for finding things that are inside that are either blocking you, and it's also a way of getting in touch with the greatest potentials that we hold inside of ourselves as well.
Well, that sounds very exciting. I'm always looking for Qigong practitioners because I see with my patients, it's a moving meditation. People get double benefits. They get the physical benefit of the motion and the left, right brain motion, as well as the psychological benefit of meditation. And it's such a beautiful art form. How did you get involved in this?
Well, I started studying Qigong about 24 years ago. It was at a time when I was also training for the New York City Marathon. And one day I went, did my training, maybe 17, 18 miles, and I was totally exhausted. And someone invited me to a Qigong class. And after 10, 15 minutes, my body had completely balanced out. When I walked away from that class, I realized that I actually felt better than I did when I started my marathon training that day. And so I knew that there was something really special about Qigong training and Qigong practice. I followed that path. I studied with several Qigong masters. I'm certified from the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine. I've been to China 3 times to study with Qigong masters. So I am very much in love with this practice. As you say, it's a moving meditation, but it's also a practice that one can do as a healing modality. So I can bring my hands to a person's body and be able to have a calming effect or a healing effect based on the fact that I'm gathering the chi and transmitting it to the client.
Now, would that be more of a Reiki practice, is gathering the energy and transmitting it to the client would be incorporating Reiki?
There are similarities. Reiki is more of a passive practice. So one could think of a Reiki practitioner as being like a straw. And the person is drawing the energy through. It's coming from the highest vibration. And the body is able to take what it needs. The Reiki practitioner just moves along the body and helps to facilitate that energy uplift and energy healing. Qigong has more practices to it so that there's a little bit more control. So you can actually pull stagnation out of the body. You can direct energy through areas that are blocked. You can find the areas of the body that are depleted, build that up. So the Qigong practice has more focus. It's a little bit more like you would see in traditional Chinese medicine or acupuncture. And the Sandlin Teak, on the other hand, is also an energy practice, but it is has more of a energy message. So in the Sandlin technique, rather than just laying the hands, we use the fingers more, feel the joints, feel the body, and I can actually feel what's happening energetically inside that a person's body, because the Sandlin technique is more of a shamanic practice. There's more of a transmission of information. So I might be able to discern if a person had like an early life issue that's blocking them. I can discern if a person has something that they're carrying for, could be many, many lifetimes. It could be generational. It could be something that they picked up from their parents. So the Sandlin technique has more capacity to go into the root cause so that you can begin to transform that aspect of the person that is giving rise to illness or disease.
It sounds incredibly, well, it's exciting and very interesting, since I had such a low level of familiarity with the Sandlin technique. What's the origin of the Sandlin technique?
The Sandlin technique comes from the Cherokee tradition. The person that I trained with, Virginia Sandlin, brought this technique really out into the world from her grandmother, who was the Cherokee woman who taught her the technique. It is in many ways patterned after a vision quest, but rather than going out into the woods, the quest is into the body. And so you could go into your body. I, as the practitioner, might get information that your consciousness or the client's consciousness is being blocked from for psychological reasons. Maybe they had an occurrence that was too painful to remember. But I would be able to grab onto that energetically and then gently walk the person through the release of that energy or that occurrence. What happens is that when we have an injury or an emotional wound, it becomes a stagnation in the body, and that's what blocks the energy. And over time, that blocked energy becomes disease. So the techniques that I use give me three different pathways to be able to help a person resolve whatever might be going on with them. And it really has a lot to do with where they are in terms of, are they dealing with chronic illness? Are they dealing with pain? For something like that, I would start with Reiki, because Reiki is great for just relieving pain, creating breakthroughs, and just releasing the stress of a situation. Qigong can go a little bit deeper because it actually relates to the block of energy in the body, so it might be related to a weakness in the kidneys, or it might be related to a weakness in the heart. So it gives me a little bit more information about the body. And the Sandlin technique gives more information about the person's emotions and state of mind. And so depending on how a person presents, I would use one of these three methodologies to help them.
This is really, I'm losing my words because it's so beautiful to hear you speaking of this. And the quest knew for many, many years, but didn't have this depth of understanding of the work that you're doing, and I'm in awe right now. Mm. Now, you're giving classes, are you not?
I do give classes on a regular basis. Currently, I'm offering a class in Brooklyn at Studio Maya in Brooklyn, and it's a morning class. It's a wonderful way to get rid of the stress. It's on Wednesday morning, 7 a.m., just right in the middle of the week. And it allows people to really pick up and get through the week, move through without too much trouble. It's only an hour. It is a way of releasing the stress and finding a state of calmness so that when you go out into the world and you have to encounter challenges and various things that are happening in your life, they don't have the same impact. And you can be somewhat apart from the chaos that surrounds you. So Qigong is a very powerful practice. I have ongoing workshops from time to time as well, so people can inquire about that. And we are also doing a monthly program meditation here, right here at WBAI in the Commons, and so people can inquire about that as well. And I have a healing space, an office in Brooklyn, in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, where I see people and help them through the various issues that they are challenged with in their lives.
How can people contact you and sign up for either the workshop or a session?
My phone number is 347-480-1, again, that is 347-480-1694. And my email is the same as the radio program that I do here at WBAI, heartofmindradio@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, Catherine, and we really appreciate and respect the work you're doing.
Thank you very much for having me.
And keep us informed of different classes and changes that happen in your life. I'd love you to come back.
Thank you very much. I'd be happy to.
Bye-bye.
And so, welcome back. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight, with Catherine and Paulette here in studio. And I tried to give you a bit of information at the top of the show. Usually save it for the end of the show, but I wanted to catch you. So I have a better look at leaving Brook Farm. There's one show coming up left. It's a snow date of a show that apparently got snowed out. This Friday, January 29th at 7:30 p.m. So this is one last chance to see Leaving Brook Farm. George and Sophia Ripley face the demise of the Transcendentalist Commune they founded in the 1840s, with the consolation that they made it work for 7 years. And Elizabeth directed this, playing and is playing Sophia. Brian Potiat, the original George, has another commitment, so Larry Lunin will be stepping in. Transcendental Fest presents Leaving Brook Farm, a short one-act play by Nina Howes, directed by Elizabeth Ruff, and starring Brian W. Potiat and Elizabeth Ruff. So it sounds like an interesting play, a one-act play, so you might want to check it out. You can get tickets at the metropolitanplayhouse.org/transcendentalfest or call 212-995-8410. It's hard for artists to make it in this world. I like to try to give a break to people who are working on their projects. The other project I wanted to tell you about is Dare to be Black, the Jack Johnson story. And he is the first black world champion heavyweight boxer. And he has there is a play at the Theater for the New City. Crystal Field is the executive artistic director there. And this play is written and performed by Tommy J. Moore and directed by Rome Neal. And it is 3 weekends in February, from the 4th to the 21st. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. And so, I don't see a phone number here, but there may be one. So you can get tickets or go to theaterforthenewcity.net, theaterforthenewcity.net, and the number is 212-254-1109. 212-254-1109. And I've been hearing a lot of talk about that, the new series, The X-Files. I haven't seen it because I don't have a TV, but I thought maybe some of our listeners may have seen this new series, The X-Files, and can give us a report. I heard that they're doing a lot of soft disclosure on The X-Files, talking about the things like the fact that the September 11th was an inside job, things like that, that a lot of technology that we have has come from captured spaceships and, you know, some interesting storylines that are based on the most popular conspiracy theories, which I don't consider to be conspiracy theories, but most people do. And I loved The X-Files. Did you?
Much.
Oh, I was in love with that show. I totally loved that show. It was kind of way out on a limb. It was pretty far out on a limb, but, you know, I love science fiction. And I thought it was very interesting that they had these two characters, one totally believed in, you know, the impossible, and then there was the other female character, you know, it was Mulder and Scully, I think, and she was, like, very skeptical, but she kept getting proved wrong as all of these weird things would happen. I thought it was a great show. If you have any thoughts, you can give us a call to the number 718-780-8888, 718-780-8888. And so people can call about that or whatever you might have on your mind. And let us know what's up what's up with you, what's up in your world. And I think that would be very cool. So, yeah, so I have this real feeling of impending contact from star beings. I don't like to call them UFOs, unidentified flying objects. I think they're family. I think they're relatives from the stars. You should see these. If this was TV.
Oh, God.
She's like, okay.
That's, you want to say,
That's interesting. That is really interesting.
I guess anything is possible.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's very probable. I don't believe humanity evolved directly from apes. I think that we're genetically engineered from beings from more advanced planets. Well, I told you I like science fiction, right? Okay. But I think it's science fact. I think there's a lot of evidence to that fact. If you look in archaeological history, there's a tremendous amount of archaeology that can't be explained. You know, you'll see in Egypt, for example, Kemet, stones being cut with extreme precision that really couldn't be cut by hand. You'll see a lot of ancient archaeology that looks a lot like spacecraft. You see a lot of paintings that have spacecraft in it. And if you look into a lot of the indigenous cultural history, many indigenous peoples claim to have come from the stars. So I think that there's really reason to believe that this is true, that we indeed are different races that come from different civilizations that predate humanity's existence on Earth. That's, I really do believe that. But, you know, it's one of those things that not a lot of conventionally trained people, archaeologists, will admit to. You know, they look at the stuff, they see the stuff, they hide the stuff. It's the same thing with, like, the Vatican archive and vaults. They have a tremendous amount of history that has been destroyed when they burned the libraries in Alexandria for being, I guess, unchristian, whatever. A lot of that stuff ended up, a lot of stuff ended up in the Vatican vault. Mm. So there's a lot of history we don't really have any connection to.
I'm aware, and I'm aware of the fact that when one civilization, or, well, I guess you want to call it civilization, conquers another, they tend to want to reinvent themselves, and in the process, sort of hide the whatever historical documents they find in this new space, and then reinvent themselves into something that's bigger, brighter, better, more advanced, been the pattern of history.
Yeah, and I think that in keeping with that, all of our known history that we are taught in schools presumes that nothing occurred before the Greco-Roman Empire. And that, the people of the ancient civilizations were somehow savages. And so, to me, that's a blatant lie. It's a recharacterization of the truth. And I think it's relevant because ever since the Greco-Roman Empire, specifically the Roman Empire, there's been a concerted effort to destroy indigenous peoples, and not just their history, but their cultures entirely and civilizations entirely. And so there's just so much wisdom that is not permissible in our culture because of the Roman Empire. So, you know, even though it sounds wacky to say that human civilization goes very far back, and I feel convinced that there have been many civilizations on Earth. And when you look at some of the really ancient archaeology, like in South Africa, a lot of that stuff is hundreds of thousands of years old. And so, to me, it just makes sense that so much more has taken place than we realize. And also from my perspective, I think a lot of, I'm not denying the existence of angelic beings, but I think a lot of what people interpreted as angelic beings were actually celestial beings from other planets coming here, or beings from other densities coming here. So I think that we live in a third, 3D, 4D existence, third dimensions, you know, which is a very physical existence. But I am convinced that there are dimensions that are operating at a much higher vibration right here. And so we don't have the capacity to see and hear it, but it's here. And so I think that there, the magnitude of what exists is huge. It's really huge. And even when we look into the solar system, I mean, if you just look out at all the stars, or if you look on the internet, if you can't see stars like in New York, in the vast expanse of space, really, just on the law of probability with advanced life.
True.
Yeah, it's the probability is that there's much life in the mm-hmm. universe. So, and the reason that we have such difficulty on Earth, I feel, and I think there's evidence for that, that one of these, some of these advanced civilizations interrupted humanity when we were at a very delicate stage of evolution, and they took advantage. Let me see who's on the line. Hello, you're on the air. Hello. Oops, hold on, wrong slide. Hello, you're on the air. Are you there? No? I'll get it together. Hello, you're on the air. We're trying, keep trying till we find you. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right, here's my question is really, how do you define civilizations? You know, how do we think of them? I'm thinking of different empires. Are we defining civilizations as whatever was in power at the time, whatever it might have been, prior to Rome, prior to Byzantium?
I'm not really speaking in terms of who's in power.
Right.
I'm really thinking, really, in terms of ages, in terms of pre-biblical age, the pre-diluvian age before the flood, thinking. So I'm thinking in terms of civilizations that have come and gone through a great expanse of time.
Right. Would you agree that whether we think those are positive, if you want to use the word, rather than negative, benign, rather than malevolent? I'm not sure. Are they all basically striving to get rid of the previous one, just like your point that you made, you know, that wipe out the history? Is that endemic? Is that part of the nature of ages, if you will?
I'm not making that claim. I'm not making that claim at all.
I'm
only speaking of the one that I'm familiar with, which is
right.
the one that I've been educated in.
I really
am not saying that that's the case. Earlier times, it may very well be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be exclusively so.
Right.
I think that there were many civilizations that lived harmoniously for long spans of time
uh-huh.
before that civilization fell for whatever reason.
Right.
It may have been an asteroid. It may have been a flood. It may have been a conquering
right.
civilization. There could
right.
be any. It could be that, you know, a certain area of land became depleted
uh-huh.
of and couldn't sustain the civilization, and they moved on for those reasons. I think there's any number of reasons that could cause a civilization to fall.
Right. Okay, I'll go to your use of the word ages then. I guess we're all today, I think you used the term educated in our particular time, I think, or certainly influenced. I mean, that's probably true of all of us, isn't it? We're all influenced by by the time that we're in now. Would you agree?
Everyone is influenced by the time we're in now. That's absolutely true. Because if you look at the world that we exist in now, we have oil companies digging into the ground. That affects every human being on the planet.
Right, right. Now, the question then is, if one wants to move the whole the world, let's use the word age, I'll go with that. If we think of that and we want to be less harmful to the environment, to the age, to everything else, is the Qigong that you're focusing on, for example, or the Reiki, or any of those, are they part of this age or are they not, really? In other words, was there a time perhaps when most individuals, so you're saying Qigong, let's go into the concept of the native people that were living in this part of the world, if you will,
mm-hmm.
prior to the people that came from Europe, let's say, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is in your mind all part of the same age? In other words, is our age part of the shaman age, part of the African, et cetera? Is it all part of one or is it successions?
I guess it depends on how you interpret it, because there is an overlap.
Yeah.
And there is a continuity through heritage and ancestry.
Right.
And so pretty far back, there's a lot of overlap and continuity. I do believe that there are ages that are buried in time, and there isn't the same kind of continuity.
Right,
but in terms of the energy, say Qigong, so
right.
in China that would be the Tao, it would be the yin-yang. But in South America that would be the Tzolk'in, because it's
right.
the same, it's a similar system of understanding energetic forces with different cultural understandings, but underlying it is a common understanding of energy. So you'll find if you go into a lot of the indigenous cultures, be it Africa or Kemet, be it South America, Central America, even probably the indigenous cultures of Europe had a different understanding of the balance of energy. I'm not sure about the energy part in the cultures of Europe because I'm not that familiar with, say the Druids, but I would suspect that it's there in every culture.
Right, right, right. On the same topic, but shifting a little bit further, I don't want to keep. But what is the thought? What is your opinion of the idea that we cannot have this positive, this negative, this yin and this yang, this male and this female, this good and this bad, and is it possible to have good without a bad?
I
know what I'm saying. That's that simple to me.
I think you can have a good without a bad,
mm-hmm.
or you can have a bad without a good, or you can not have a judgment about something and just recognize that there are two sides to a whole. So is light good? Is dark good? It depends on whether or not you're making a judgment about it. So I think where we get into good and bad is when judgment comes into the picture. And prior to judgment being part of the picture, then it is just this or that. Could you talk? I'm going to pick.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. But I missed it. So the number here is 718-780-8888. That's 718-780-8888. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. Yes. Hello.
Yes, hi. Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're good, thank you.
Yeah, hi. I called last week, so I'm calling here again.
Okay.
Good to see you folks on. I didn't come in at the beginning of the program, so I must have some proclivity for coming in, you know, midstream here.
It's a good thing it's an hour and a half program. You still have a little bit left. So remind us, what is your name again?
Well, I'll give my name for the first time because I didn't give it last time.
Okay.
My name is Austin.
Okay.
Pretty frequent, infrequent caller to bring paradox into discussion.
Yeah.
Which I can reconcile. Yeah, the gentleman on before, I think he, and I'm not saying this in any way, shape, or form to try and pick on him. I'm just saying here's another way of looking at things, that there's too much of a Western notion. I think it's a fetish in much of Western thinking to see things as binary, as either or.
Mm-hmm.
And here's darkness and light, and here's this civilization that exists, or that civilization that exists hermetically sealed, you know, in and of itself, and we judge it this way or that way. I just don't think that that's the way human dynamics and systems and history work. Things are a continuum, and they're a cycle at the same time, in the sense that civilizations, however you want to define that, and I don't think civilizations, I agree with you, have to be something that has to be ascribed to any kind of power paradigm or any kind of dominance. I think people often get stuck in the way of seeing things as wanting to pin things down or put them in a box. And very often, you know, we have this expression, the whole is greater than the sum, you know, of the parts. And mm-hmm. I would just add, yeah, like, no kidding, it is that and much, 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 much more. So it's not just the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. The whole is its own kind of entity, which has a lot of dynamics, which are much more important, and give us insights, which dissecting the individual parts can only give us limited notions of what something is. So I'm just thinking that, you know, I've been in a lot of discussion groups, and again, I'm not picking on this gentleman, but I have this experience where someone who thinks like that, we're often trying and getting challenged me, and sometimes I think we're just talking cross purposes, and I don't know that there's a reconciliation, because he's entitled to his point of view, but I don't know that there is a meeting point in the middle. There may be, but sometimes, in other words, I don't think every conversation is justified or produces fruit, is more beneficial than not. Because I think sometimes it'd be better if we just acknowledge that we're talking past each other on some level. There's nothing wrong with that. But let's just admit that to that for what that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some notions of processing the world which to some degree are kind of irreconcilable, and we don't like to think that, because we like to think that every conversation is going to move things along. You know, I know that's a very controversial thing to say, because people think, well, you're entitled to your own opinion. I have problems with that, because I think that puts on the same level the person who just wants to knock stuff down. And I'm not saying he's in that category, but there are a lot of people who just come in and their notions are to just, you know, be a provocateur. And then you put that up against someone who's trying to put out an argument to the best of their that they can, degree that they can, that's thought out. And so that notion of you're entitled to your opinion has been so abused that I don't give it much validity. It's not about freedom of speech. Everyone's entitled to freedom of speech, but as we also say, you're entitled to freedom of speech. That doesn't mean you're exempt from the consequences of what you say.
Good point.
You know, and so, and again, this is a philosophical discussion. This is not like the level of slander or libel or anything, but that's just a point I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you.
I'll hang up now, because I've said a mouthful there. Huh? Give somebody else a chance.
Okay,
you all have a good night, okay? Take
care.
You
too, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Okay, let's see. Hello, you're on the air. Hello? You're live.
Hello?
You're live on the radio.
Okay. Well, I was listening to the previous.
Yes, go ahead.
I was listening to the previous caller.
Yes, go ahead.
And I was hearing what he was saying,
mm-hmm.
which is like some people do into, you know, a conversation to say, like, just
put in ingredients of bafflement on the fish.
Excuse me? Hello?
Hello?
Okay.
Yes. Well, some people, just like he said, provocateur, that was the word he used. But some people are just that way. I mean, you know, they're not genuine, as I said before. They're not interested in what you were saying earlier. They want to put a...
Well, you know...
Something in your path.
It's hard to say. I have a tendency to accept that people have going to have their opinions, and they're calling in to offer their opinion on a particular subject, and that's kind of what a talk show is about. So it's really okay. I thought the first caller was quite interesting to me. I didn't really assign an agenda to what he was saying. I just assumed that he has his perspective. We all have our perspective. And I thought we kind of agreed on certain things. So, so yeah, it's interesting to see where it all goes. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Tammy from Brooklyn, and I appreciate your program. And I really like the subject that you are bringing up. I guess I'd like to throw a few additions in there that would help you to, because I would like to hear more about what you were talking about. I'm aware of the burning of Alexander's library. I'm aware of there are other life forms, and I like the terminology that you use. I remember Gary Noel once talked about there being another planet exactly like planet Earth. It was called a parallel universe, but it's 1 million years older than this planet. And one more thing was that I used to sit every night with my cat and watch the sun set go down, watch the sun set going down. And we'd be sitting there in the dark because then we'd watch the moon come up. And I'd enjoy it. He'd sit in my lap quietly. And I used to do this regularly every night, every evening, watching the sun go down with my cat in my lap. And I kid you not, but one night I saw what was like what most people have said a flying saucer, but I never thought I'd see anything like that. But it was a shape like one, and it moved very quickly from left to right. And it hung in the air, and I just stood there watching it. And then it took a while, and it disappeared. Then I had an experience that I had my cat for a long time. He lived to be 17 years and 6 months, and he eventually he died. He got a hold of some rat poisoning, sad to say. But when I took him to the vet, et cetera, it devastated me, is the point, about his death. And I just kept crying and crying and crying. And I'd only read about it in the past when I was very young, that things like that, people would see their loved ones and so forth. I'd never experienced it before, but I kept crying so much. And then something caused me to stop crying. And I looked up and I saw the cat. It was like a very strong shadow, but not a shadow on the wall. It was a shadow standing in the kitchen. It was the cat, the figure of him, the same exact figure, size and everything. And I called his name, and then he walked from the kitchen into the living room where I was, and he stood next to his tree stump. And I called his name again. There was no answering, but he just stood there. And it was like 45 minutes that my eyes were widened, and he just stood there. So, I mean, these things that you're saying... I always wanted, as a youth, to develop my, to be the best that I could be and to develop all of the positiveness. We all live in a negative and, you know, mostly living out. And I have a friend who's 72 years old. He's always talked about wanting to go in another dimension, and I did so when I was young. So with the conversations that you're having, it's really relevant. A lot of people are looking for a change of positiveness, are looking for a change to connect with positive places, and there are other people who, we're not the only planet who is alive, you know, who there are other planets and places that we're not aware of. I really appreciate your program.
Thank you very much. Okay. Well, call again soon, because, you know, it's a vibe and it's an understanding and it's a ongoing conversation, I think. But you're right, there are dimensions, and you can communicate to loved ones from the other side. They can communicate to you. And so they're still living, but in another vibrational state, a more spiritual state. And it's real. So from my perspective, I guess from your perspective as well. Thank you.
A lot for us to learn.
Yeah.
And I wish we could as a whole on this planet Earth.
Me too. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you are on the air.
Oh, hi. Yeah, hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Kathy. I'm marveling at the discussion. That's why I love this program so much, because, you know, we can go out into, you know, all kinds of different universes and thoughts that are not normally discussed, mm-hmm. because our thoughts, of course, are just thoughts, and the only way that we have of expressing anything that's on our mind at all is words. That's the only tools that we have. So just from the thoughts to the words starts to encapsulate stuff, and it starts to break it down in ways that are already restricting the actual flow of what the energy of the mind is actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
And can actually do. And so it just seems so wonderful when we can think about all the different possibilities that are, you know, because like some people say, okay, oh, the planet had like a whole lot of ages, the Lemurian and the Atlantean, and that's where the wisdom came from, and that's how it got passed down. And then others say, oh, it was from aliens that came from, you know, another galaxy, and they brought it here and they placed it into a world that was only so much developed, and then that's why there was such a space jump between animals and humans. And some people say, well, no, that's just the way that the planes are set up, so that once you sort of pass out of the animal plane, then the next plane is a human plane. So you have to develop in a totally different way. And that's why, like, when people say, the instincts that we have as animals actually change into the feelings that we have when we're humans, because they're the same things that are connecting us to wanting to be alive and Earth and everything else. But at the same time, since we're more complex beings, then we have to now use those same things that were instincts in a different manner, just because of the way that we have developed and the way that our mind processes things now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that would cause that. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many ways of thinking, you know. And then when you get to quantum physics, and they tell you that there's, you know, oh, well, there's at least 10 different dimensions, you know. So you say, okay, 10 or more than that, and then you talk about.
I think they're infinite, but that's just me.
right. There has to be infinite. There's no boundaries. Like, you know, it's like when you're going out into the universe. And then all of a sudden you see a sign that says dead end, you know? Mm-hmm. That can't happen, you know?
because scientists are also telling us that the universe is growing. And
yes.
If you listen to Michio Kaku, he talks mm-hmm. about each universe being a bubble, and there are multiple
uh-huh.
universes, and who knows yes. what it is that's containing the multiple universes.
Right.
So the potential for expression of life is infinite.
Exactly.
And I have another call I need to get in before the end of the show, but I really appreciate your call because it's true. It's wonderful to explore the possibility and come to understand how expansive the truth really is.
As long as
we get out from under the structure of the conditioned mind or the structure of intellectual power of, you know, education. There's a lot we can learn, a lot we can discover. Thank you for your call.
Thank you so much for letting me speak. Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, you're on the air. Thank you for being patient.
Hi, how's it going?
How you doing? I'm good.
Just wanted to say, first of all, thank you so much for putting this program on. I speak probably for a lot of people who... really have interest in that level of spirituality and connection to the universe. So I just want to say thank you, first of all.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you.
Yeah. And I'd like to share, because it's hard, even for me, I'm an artist, it's hard to find people to have the conversation with about spirituality and about the universe and to question, the narrative. It's the supreme example of cognitive dissonance. That's everywhere, in a lot of people's worlds. But anyway, I'd like to share my couple threads. I believe in Gaia, Mother Earth. I believe in the Christ consciousness. I think there's a lot of mystics that were sprinkled in throughout history. Hypatia of Alexandria. But there's a couple threads that I like to share, which you touched upon a little bit. And one thread's called Thy Always Seek. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I found a lot of useful information off it.
Mm-hmm. What is it again?
Thy Always Seek.
Thy Always Seek. Okay.
And that's on YouTube and Facebook. That really goes into... the genesis of where we came from, the original four races.
Mm-hmm.
You have the, I'm still learning about it, but tons and tons of great food for thought. And then there's one of my favorite authors, his name's John Lamb Lash.
Uh-huh.
And he's from metahistory.org. I sort of learned a lot about Gaia and, the connection to the female divinity, the connection to the pleroma of everything that's provided for us.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last is futureprimitive.org. And that's really cool. Food for thought. Good food for thought. Woman's used to hang out with Timothy Leary, but she brings on these really cool people that talk about narratives that interest people like you and I.
Cool. I jotted all that down. I'm gonna check it out myself. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
that's so cool. All right, thank you for calling, because this is a great conversation to have.
Yeah, I think, and everyone should go on and support the station, because you can't get a station like this out here, people. This is so if you're not a member, I'm plugging for you, but if you're not a member, become a member, support.
Apologies, man. That's a great thing, especially since we're going into Fun Drive next month. So yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You got it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Cool. So...
wow.
Interesting group of calls, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah. I love talking about this kind of metaphysical, sort of otherworldly stuff from time to time. We balance it out with the science. You balance it out with the science.
I try.
I stay pretty much on the other side of the world.
I'm a mixture.
I am too. I'm teasing myself, but evolution is an interesting thing. One of our callers, I wanted to answer, but I didn't want to miss out on getting everyone in. I actually think, in some ways, animals are more evolved than humans, and I say that because, first of all, they, they function according to a group mind, which a lot of people look down on, but function according to a group mind,
definitely.
A collective unconscious. It's just that we're mucking it up. Animals have it together. They follow the path of their genetic wisdom, and animals are very, very feeling beings. They're not thinking beings as much as humans, but they're very much in touch with their feelings. If you've ever had a cat, you will know that for sure. But also, human beings, I believe, are evolving into that state where we graduate from the collective unconscious. It's really what evolution is about in terms of humanity, so that we can understand that we are actually Gaia. You are not separate from the earth. Our physical body is made up of the elements of the earth, and on a spiritual level, we're deeply connected to the spirit of the planet, and we're deeply connected to the spirit of each other. And when we can look into each other's eyes and recognize ourselves in each other's eyes, there's going to be less violence and mayhem in the world. So to me, that's what evolution is about. And when we can get to the level of no harm, where we're not harming ourselves or each other, then I believe that's when we can transcend the third, fourth dimension into fifth, sixth, seventh dimension, which means that we become less dense. Everything is the same, except there's less density. So rather than our physicality being based in carbon, it will be based in crystal.
That's interesting.
I know. Fascinating, fascinating. But I believe that's what's happening as we speak. That is what a lot of people talk about.
No.
Well, if you read in the Bible, and if you know anything about Christianity, Jesus Christ allegedly ascended into heaven. So it comes from that concept of
levitating.
Not levitating, it means transcending physical reality into like the after-death experience. Like if you can comprehend that after death, the spirit is still alive and can communicate with you, with us here in our lives, that there's this whole world of after-death where all the dead people are there having parties, whatever they do. But it's in a world that we can't see.
Right.
And so ascension, essentially, is humanity expanding awareness enough to be able to interact more directly with those higher vibrational existences.
It's the part of existence that's beyond just this narrow spectrum of ultraviolet light.
Yeah, that we can perceive with our senses. So there's a vast part of reality that is beyond our perception. And so you can ascribe it as being spiritual, or you can just say, well, reality has a lot of bandwidth and we can only perceive a narrow bandwidth. So from my perspective, ascension is getting to have the capacity to expand our bandwidth, to see more and to perceive more and to be able to communicate. So some people can communicate with animals. Some people can communicate with plant life and trees. A lot of indigenous people know that. That's how they find medicines, because they're communicating directly with plant life. And so some people can communicate with the spiritual world after death experience. And so for me, ascension can be more described as expansion, as having a perceptual expansion to be able to see far beyond our limited perspective. And to me, that's where whom I call star beings, some people call aliens, fall into those spectrums. When we look even in our solar system at all the different planets, because we're looking for life as it manifests on Earth. But who's to say there isn't a different dynamic on each planet, a different dimension of expression, a different vibrational expression that doesn't require oxygen? Or even on our planet, we have microbes that can survive inside of a volcano, that can survive under almost any condition on Earth, life can survive. So it suggests to me that on any condition, life conditions, but we can't perceive it.
True, and plus you're seeing things from a distance of light years.
Yeah, so I just think anything is possible. It's probable, actually. And like our first caller who saw the flying object, I've seen them as well. And I've seen them even before they created drones and stuff like that. So I think that there's a real possibility that as we evolve, as humanity evolves, as a certain percentage of humanity evolves, that we're going to be able to see that much more common. And I'm convinced that these beings are walking around on Earth, and they look very human. I've noticed people who have a bit of an oddity to them, maybe extremely tall or extremely thin or extremely translucent or slightly translucent. So I've seen this kind of thing, and so I think that there are star beings walking around on the planet already. We just don't perceive them as such. That's just me.
Okay.
She says, I'm not going to say anything on the air to embarrass you, so I'm just, you know, going to accept. No, I understand.
No, I do think that there's definitely something that is not visible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're all sentient beings, and that there if we slow down and actually stand still, we have the ability to feel.
Absolutely true.
And it's something where it's a question. Sometimes it's hard to explain. And I sort of just accept that as another dimension of who we are as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's sort of where my understanding takes me. My knowledge is not great enough, although I've known of other people who I've been very close to, who see the universe itself as actually a living system.
Oh, that was Robert.
That's right. And the sun and the plasma that the sun puts out as sort mm-hmm. of a bloodstream.
Yeah.
And that the planets themselves are in their own way organs. They're part, they have different functions in a larger living system. And I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because what the sun puts out is the energy that creates and sustains us all. But in terms of what's visible and invisible, I think we have so many more senses than just the five senses.
We do. I think we're trained out of them. I think when we're born, we have great sensitivity. And if you see children, you could see them seeing things that we don't see. But we don't have access to it as adults because of our conditioning. We have to make room. Coming up, Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. And we played a piece called Hope. I don't see the name of the person who created that song. But now we're going to hear Sinead O'Connor, Just Like You Said It Would Be. And we want to wish you a good evening. Stay tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. Just like you said it would be.
It's just like you said it would be. It's just like you said it would be. It's just like you said it would be. I can see too many mouths open, too many eyes closed, gaze closed, many, many minds open, too many legs open. Tell me, tell me, tell me, tell me, do. Why isn't it why? I don't see why isn't why.
Program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and yes, the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, Kaleidocast, well, it's actually some wonderful people. We'll be talking about that after that person's week. Stay tuned. Okay, stand by while I figure out why this isn't audible to me. Maybe it is to you, but I am not hearing Dan Person's review, so we're going to try that again. trying another review to see if that will work. Okay. And from that came the Fire Sign Theater. And their first album was Waiting for the Electrician or Someone Like Him. Their second album was, I forgot the proper title, but the best known part of it, of course, was Nick Danger, Third Eye. And then their third album was, my God, I used to be able to recite these by heart. The fourth was I Think We're All Buzzes on This Bus. The third was Hand Me That Dwarf, Don't Crush the Pliers. And those last two were each nominated for Hugo Awards for Special Dramatic Presentation. But unfortunately, like the third one came up against something called 2001 A Space Odyssey and lost to it. I don't know why. I have no, the unfairness of it. But if we're talking about that, and we shouldn't be, because the show, we're wasting time. Dan Persons has two things to review this morning.
And as unambiguous and as there the he film is,
thank you,
is
Dan.
That
okay.
In the summer of 1969,
let's start this again. So everybody
I'm Dan Persons,
in your head, this never happened. The theme music has just ended, and now, magically, we hear...
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The conceit of the new comedy Moonwalkers is that in the summer of 1969, a CIA operative played by Ron Perlman
travels to... That's last week's. I was using that for experimentation. Try this one now.
For Hour of the Wolf.
Ah, better.
Slam Dance this past weekend saw the debut of Director's Cut, a new film written by and starring Penn Jillette of the comedy magic team of Penn and Teller. I didn't get to go to Slam Dance, by the way. I was stuck here in Philadelphia. They just sent me a screener. Still got snow, just didn't get any of the Park City cachet. Who needs it anyway? I do. Anyway, if you know Penn and Teller, you know their shtick is to deconstruct magic within the context of magic itself. They might reveal the secret of their illusions as they're doing them, or fortify an innocuous trick with an aggressive, disconcerting ambience. The same process is applied to Director's Cut, which assumes the format of a director's commentary to a crappy, direct-to-video copycat killer movie called Knocked Off. The twist here is that the director doing the commentary is not the director of Knocked Off, Adam Rifkin, who plays himself on camera and is also, not coincidentally, the director of Director's Cut, but one Herbert Blount, played by Jillette, a crowdfunder who shelled out enough bucks for an executive producer credit, a speaking role during a fast food restaurant massacre, and the opportunity to document the production with his own camera. That last perk is an unfortunate one, since Blount is also a dangerously obsessive fan of the film's star, Missy Pyle, who plays an FBI agent within the context of the movie within the movie, and plays herself when she's off camera. And when Blount perceives the actress as being dissed on set and not given her due on screen, he decides to take matters into his own hands. Step one, kidnap Missy to his own private green screen studio. So what Director's Cut turns out to be is a concatenation of diverse footage. The supposedly commercial release of Knocked Off, Blount's on-set footage, which he redubs not at all convincingly, to fit his own twisted conception of the film, his green screen restagings that feature him playing against Missy as her new partner and romantic interest, as well as some extra special hidden camera footage from the actress's hotel room, just to up the creep factor. And yeah, as the film progresses, it gets hella creepy. Credit has to go to Missy Pyle for playing a terrified, involuntary cast member of Blount's masturbatory revision while she's daubed in the psychopath's notion of glamour makeup, which makes her look like nothing so much as a kabuki clown. Penn Jillette is not exactly a close friend of nuance, and director Adam Rifkin, whose previous credits include the quasi-Lynchian fantasy The Dark Backward and the raunchy teen comedy Detroit Rock City, both of which I have a fondness for, by the way, is a pretty good match to his star in temperament. Rifkin actually pulls off the various format shifts quite handily, with Knocked Off actually a pretty decent send-up of the shallow visual posturing endemic to direct-to-video releases, although the director does stage a genuinely impressive fast food massacre, far better than these things usually get. I do wish the film didn't tip its hand from frame one. A bit of subtlety would have helped with the satire and better sold the film's oddball format. But you do get walk-ons by the likes of Gilbert Gottfried and Ron Jeremy, and Teller, Gillette's typically mute partner, talks in this one, and has one of the funnier sequences to boot.